It's time for the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5.
Now, broadcasting live from the Huntington Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
When the world was a time of this and that, I was young, didn't know to hold it back. Now we're here in the world, something else. We can leave any day, call for help. We were gods, nobody was above me. The A on my chest like a Dolce. The A on my chest, put your fist up. The A on my chest like a chipmunk. Alvin, Theodore, breathe in, breathe out. Me and more, breathe in, breathe out. Never mind, it was time. Number nine, let my lies, feline, with a death wish. Be right, didn't help. No name on the guest list. Hold on, we're destined.
Welcome into the show. The two guys ahead of us actually did take a segment away from us. I mean, they had flirted with it in the past, but this time was an egregious lack of respect for us, so we started at 10:15. In a normal situation, this would be about the time we would come back from the first segment break, so we started a show. A segment off. A segment less than we would normally. But hey, we'll move on. We know they don't respect us, but that's just how it goes. The Rockets got some respect last night. They have struggled against the top three in the West, and it's in stark comparison to what they were last year. An article that was written January 23rd of last year talked about how the Rockets were great against the top teams in the West. 2 days from today, but a year ago, the Rockets were 9-2 against the top teams in the Western Conference at the time. Before last night's game, they were 1-5. Now they're 2-5 with the win over the Spurs. It was not going in a positive way until their defense turned up. They gave up 70 points at the half, which is, of course, on pace to give up 140 for the game. And that has generally been the main culprit, because if you talk to the head coach, he expects that defensive intensity to be there no matter what. You can shoot poorly, you can turn the ball over, but you have to play defense. And they were not doing that early. Like, Wimby didn't have a great game, certainly had an awful second half, but they were giving up stuff to everybody else. And then their defense found a way. They picked it up late in the third quarter, started a big run. A run I thought was going to get sidetracked by the bent rim that they had to replace. I think Stephon Castle dunked and it bent the rim. Either way, there was a stoppage of play about 15 to 20 minutes for a rim issue, and I thought the momentum was gone. It was not. The Rockets only allowed 36 points in the second half, 14 in the fourth quarter in that 111-106 win. So they beat the Spurs. They go 2-5 against the top three in the West, and now they've won three in a row. And, of course, the star of the night, you have to throw it to Reed Sheppard. As far as guys who sometimes have up and down performances, he was really good in the fourth quarter, got to the basket, made some shots, took some guys on one-on-one, and did a little playmaking as well, and stood up on the defensive end. I said it before, I think we're coming back from our winter break right after we had the Christmas party, then we had some time off. The thing I had learned was the Spurs are ahead of schedule, and that still remains the case. They're just a team I did not really consider as a threat to a potential Rockets run, and they just are. I was looking at their roster as they were playing last night, and of course the Wimby thing in their favor, got the number one overall pick, were able to draft him, but there's no guarantee you were going to be right on the other ones. Like, Castle's a player, Dylan Harper a player, and then the guys who filled in for him, like Champagne, made 8 threes last night. I don't like it. It feels like the Spurs are just going to be a force and a thorn for the next decade as long as Wimby stays on the floor, and that's just the way it is. But you get the win last night, and got to feel good. You could tell by the bench's reaction, particularly in the midst of the comeback where they couldn't sit down. They were standing up for large portions of that fourth quarter, that this one was big for the Rockets. They knew that they had struggled. I don't know what Ime said at halftime after his team gave up 70 points. I imagine it wasn't complimentary to their effort. And they locked down the Spurs late. They forced Wimby to take jump shots. Kevin Durant talked about it. He said, when he's in the paint, dunking the basketball and landing in, he's a giant problem. Sure, he can knock. And he says, sure, he can knock down some shots, but from the perimeter. But getting him to fade away, getting him to shoot jump shots is the plan. And when he does that, we've got a shot. And they did a really good job. Kevin Durant did his job on him at times. Jabari Smith as well. A real nice effort for a team who look like they're well on their way to getting blown out. Because throughout the first half of that third quarter, they were down 10 to 12 throughout. That was kind of a consistent margin throughout until they got going. And, you know, as soon as that fourth quarter started, they were still down 10, but you could still feel the momentum going their way because they were getting stops late in the third quarter. And because they were down at one point by 16, and they cut it to 10 by the end of the quarter. And then the defense continued to harass the Spurs throughout. So that's one of those wins where you might point to as their best win of the year because of the circumstances. I think they beat Denver earlier as well this year, but this one being down at home against a team you had no success against, and you find a way. So Rockets get that one, 111-106. And I was thinking about this because of the conversations earlier on the morning show that the Rockets, and I guess maybe Astros, if they make a big move, are the only things that are going to save us from an offseason of what's the deal with C.J. Stroud. This is the football offseason version of the Bregman stuff, where at any time there was a report on Bregman, there had to be at least a discussion about it. I don't know what else there is to say about C.J. Stroud at this point other than we'll see you at minicamp. And that won't even be a real judge of who you're going to be because no one cares until the regular season and hopefully eventually the playoffs. There's going to be a lot of oxygen on that particular player where there's nothing he can do until September unless he does a podcast. And then, of course, we'd have to talk about that, I guess.
Yeah.
I think the Rockets can – only thing that can save us is a good Rockets run.
There'll be a Diana Rossini or, you know, what, I don't know, Jeff Darlington, like, piece where, like, yeah, you know, sources inside the Texans, whatever, say, and then that'll be a whole three-day thing. Yeah, no, C.J. Stroud needs to be the biggest Rockets and Astros fan in the world.
We need good
Houston
starts.
Cougars basketball, root for them, too.
Yeah.
Can't hurt.
Deep run, for of course, we want the Astros to get off to a great start, make a bold trade or – I don't know of bold signings in the cars, but a bold trade before spring training.
And then start the season like 21-5 or something.
Announce yourself as back to being a real contender for a World Series. Yeah. We need distraction because if I got a hyper focus on the quarterback for the next, I guess until the draft, and even then the Texans don't have a high pick, but at least that's something else to get to. In free agency, we'll see. They like to be players, whether through the trade market to acquire a piece. Maybe there's something there. But, yeah, I can foresee a stretch of time where the only thing anyone wants to talk about is the quarterback, even though there's nothing else to talk about with him. I think we might have said it all.
Actually, does he root for them to be successful?
Or awful?
There we go.
Does he root? Well, we know he's not an Astro fan.
You think I'm bad?
look at these guys. I think success is his better. Well, you know,
get everyone in a better mood.
I guess you got to think about the psychology of a sports fan. What gets them motivated to talk about the teams? I think with the Astros, if they're good, people want to talk about them.
Yeah.
I think the same. I don't know if the Rockets hold that type of sway until the playoffs anyway. I don't, from what I can tell.
Yeah, I don't know. The streets are buzzing today with the 4-game win streak.
Were they?
Yeah.
It's a 3-game win streak, by the way.
People were honking their horns and going crazy.
You, even in your joke, are wrong. It's only a 3-game win streak. Well. So the streets clearly are not buzzing, because at least they would have had the number of games won in a row right. I got
always
it.
Good for a fact check on a joke.
I'm just, I am just saying, I wouldn't have fact checked it. I wouldn't have fact checked it if your whole point was people are locked in on the Rockets. How can they be locked in if they're wrong on the win streak? That's all. It's less about you and more about the breakdown of the joke. No, I think negativity kind of wins, particularly with the quarterback. I don't know how that plays out with the Rockets. I think, hey, we're just going along at 26-15, hoping that they continue to play better. And then people will get excited, because when you win 50-plus games the year before, of course you make the Kevin Durant trade. The goal is to go win a title. So I guess winning and beating the Spurs is fun for the night, but I don't know if it drives conversation. So I'm looking for something, or we're going to be locked in on number 7 for a good portion.
He's lucky it's not a good quarterback draft.
That we already got the whole let's trade CJ for Joe Burrow stuff. So people,
yeah,
even
that's ridiculous.
Yes, I know what you're saying. Like, if there was actually a quarterback that you could trade up for in the draft, would that be a consideration?
Yeah. Like, I saw one where it's like, would you give up like 2 firsts and CJ Stroud for Lamar Jackson? It's like, what are we doing? Like, would the Ravens give that up?
Yeah,
like,
stop it. The Ravens, who are currently coachless right now, would they do that?
Yeah, we're at the point where it's like, how is adding CJ Stroud to a trade package, like, enhancing it, enticing?
Yeah, telling the Ravens, you get to trade Lamar Jackson for the joy of eventually having to pay CJ Stroud?
Having those
conversations?
You know this guy that's way worse than your guy, and also has played worse recently in the play. I know your guy struggles in the playoffs. Take a look at this guy's playoff run.
And this guy won't be allowing you to discuss a discount because he hasn't played well. He's going to want what he thinks quarterbacks of his caliber, even if the thoughts of his caliber are kind of delusional, he's going to want all the money. So no one out there is looking to trade their guy for your guy, unless their guy is like, I don't know. Would the Bucks trade Baker Mayfield? That's even questionable. So
the real question is, would Todd Bowles call Baker Mayfield after trading?
We'll get into that. Baker's, as you know, a little ornery. You might even say petty. We'll get to that. Baker has some thoughts on the new coach of the Falcons, Kevin Stefanski. Of course, it was his coach at one point, and he did not like how his exit from Cleveland went, and he took a random shot at Kevin Stefanski just because he had time. He ain't preparing for a playoff game, so he had time.
Yeah, a lot of Twitter activity from NFL quarterbacks.
Joe Burrow tweeted.
Yeah, like, wow, like, really is the offseason.
Like, Lamar is on Twitter quite a bit, so if he fires one off, I'm not going to be surprised. But I didn't know that Baker would cut through all the noise, and he decided to. And Kevin Stefanski was like, all right, man, we'll see you twice a year. That's how it's going to be, and Baker made reference to that. So we'll get to that.
You got too feisty. The hiring, new hirings. You know, we talked yesterday about Liam Cohen and Robert Saleh. Now it's like, okay, there's some dates to be circled when the NFL schedule. I can't wait when they announce when the NFL schedule release will be. Oh man, and normally they do it on the draft. They'll say like, hey, May 25th NFL schedule release. Woo. I'm already looking forward to the announcement for the schedule release.
You can't wait.
Yeah.
You can't wait for those.
Which Thursday night will the
Jags and the Jags and Titans play?
Yeah. And then the next Thursday night it'll be the Falcons and Bucks.
Well, they may get a Monday night game. Maybe. Jags Titans seem squarely, if they want to highlight it anyway or just give a reason for someone to care about a Titans game, to throw it on Thursday night. Falcons Bucks could get them a Monday night matchup. That could get them a Monday night matchup. But
there is a lot of NFC South on Monday night football. Just like anecdotally, it always does feel like the Falcons and Bucks are playing on Monday night.
Yeah. For whatever reason, they need to get a primetime game, and they're not gonna screw with Sunday night. So let's give it to them.
Oh, no. God, no.
So that's the featured game of the week. We're not doing that on Sunday night. So we'll see. And I do have an underrated thing that happened yesterday. It only probably matters to one fan base. And Eric, I see you'll get to you when we come back. Hold on. The fact that Mike McDaniel is taking the Chargers OC job. Sorry, Texan fans, if you don't know, Mike McDaniel, very, very coveted name.
Yeah.
Had head coaching interviews, but now will be the OC for the Chargers.
He didn't even consider a team that already has its offensive coordinator.
Yeah, sorry, he couldn't interview here because the job was filled. But
jerk.
Just wait. Let DeMeco get around to it, and then make your decision. So he goes from coaching the quarterback that a lot of people think the Dolphins shouldn't have taken, and then he's going to go coach the guy that people believe they should have taken. So, do you think he just took that job because there's some rumors that the Tua McDaniel relationship kind of splintered at the end? Do you think he was like, you know what? Let me see what Jim Harbaugh does with Greg Roman. Because if he gets rid of him, I'm just going to coach the main antagonist to your story, Tua, and turn him into one of the best quarterbacks in the league. I don't know that Mike McDaniel operates that way, but it certainly is going to play on the minds of a fan base who thought we should have taken Herbert anyway. And then the offensive mastermind who helped our guy be good for a couple years is now going to go to L.A. and try to save Herbert. Trust me, as someone who's rooted for that team for the better part of my life, when McDaniel goes there, Herbert's going to become an MVP. That's just how it's going to play out.
Well, Jeff Hafley, ball's in your court.
Make a
big boy hire, Jeff Hafley.
Yeah, hire whoever and then sign Malik Willis. That seems like the thing that's going to happen. Although Malik Willis may have made himself a lot of money what he did in this run.
They can't have Tua and Malik Willis, can they?
I saw someone say Malik Willis could be a $40 million quarterback. I was like,
$90 million is going to be.
I was like, what?
Two quarterbacks that were like, there's flashes.
I was like, huh? You might as well. I would say just draft Trinidad Chambliss if you're so in love with Malik Willis.
Yeah, or ride it out with Quinn Ewers, you know?
Yeah, I think Quinn's proponent just took the Chargers job.
All right.
Well, I don't know. I don't know what Quinn's future is.
He can stay with Cameron Dicker.
He is a draft pick, so he may hang on. But I don't know if anybody in that building who was a proponent of him still has a job. So I'm not sure how that's going to go for Quinn Ewers. All right, we'll go to break. There's a lot of NFL stuff. The Bills lit fire to McDermott's reputation in their presser today. It was the owner, Pegula, took his shot. So we'll get into that. And we'll certainly talk some Texans as well because the offseason is here. It feels like the offseason will be filled with not the fun moves to solidify this roster. It'll be about strengthening a spot in with the O-line that they've had ample opportunity to, and they have been unable to. So we'll talk a little bit about that, but we'll get to Eric when we come back. If you want to join us, the number is 713-780-3776. Sean and I, till noon, we'll be back.
This is ESPN 97.5.
This is the Del Olalea Show, live from the Huntington Bank Studios. Here's Del Olalea.
So in an age where everything is documented in front of a camera, the Bills are going to have some problems. And we'll get to that after we talk to Eric. But they were making statements to disassociate themselves from a pick, you know, of a guy who's still on their roster, by the way. And the people have already found the receipt. So we'll talk about that. But let's get to Eric. Let's talk about the games. What's up, Eric?
Hey guys, classes that they're cutting into our time, 15 minutes. But since old man Rivers Beck is leaving Miami, who would you rather have, Bill? Alberto Mendoza or Mensa from Duke? And I don't know why they were going for a deep on 2nd and 10 with 52 seconds left in the game with Miami. But it is what it is. You know, I'm going to I've been a Miami fan since the 80s, since Howard Hamburger was the coach there. And I heard they're going to trade rumblings that trying to trade Christian Walker to the Red Sox. I'll hang up and listen.
Well, it's Schnellenberger, but I've been a fan a long time as well. Why they went for it, it was a choice by the quarterback. There were guys who were not running deep routes. He just did not pick them, and as you said, is what it is as far as that's concerned. Mendoza, the younger brother, or Mensah. It might take longer because Duke, the report came out that Duke was suing. If you don't know the story, Darian Mensah, who was a Tulane quarterback under Willie Fritz, I believe, transferred to Duke and signed a 2-year NIL deal on the last day of the portal, when Miami apparently may have struck out on other quarterbacks. He enters the portal, and the belief is that his destination is Miami. Duke was not thrilled, as you might imagine, losing their quarterback on the final day. The thought was they were going to acquiesce, you know, to have a discussion with Miami or the ACC, and maybe money exchanges hands for a buyout, whatever the contract with State, and it was gonna, they're gonna make Duke good on, throw a little something at Duke so they're not upset. And Mensah's representatives believe that everything was okay, and then we hear yesterday that Duke is suing Mensah to keep him. Now the initial judge has Duke ties, so he had to toss it to another judge, and that judge said that you can't keep him out of the portal. You have to enter him. So he's expected to be in the portal by today. But Duke wants an injunction to keep him from enrolling anyplace else. So wherever he goes, it may not be immediate. He's going to need to wait on a court ruling. But the initial ruling says, Duke, you can't keep him out of the portal no matter what your contract says. There's nothing that keeps him from entering the portal. So that's that. But I would rather have Mensah than Alberto Mendoza. Mensah, I've seen him be really good. Alberto, he's just the Heisman Trophy winner's younger brother. That's all I know about him.
Yeah. And historically, the younger brother.
Yeah. Like
Marcus Vick. I'd rather have Michael.
Sure. Of course.
Case McCoy. Rather have Colt.
You know, Eli was a good college quarterback. Of course, he's not Peyton. But I don't think Fernando is Peyton. So if we're just going the scale
that too. He's not Michael Vick either.
Yeah, the scale
looked like it.
Older brother. And that one touchdown. Michael Vick wouldn't have got touched, though. There's a difference there.
Yeah.
The older brother being better. Okay. So that doesn't mean the younger brother won't be good. But if I just do the scaling.
Generally,
Fernando from Peyton, Alberto to Eli. I don't think I'm winning anything with Alberto. Particularly a guy who hasn't played very much. So I'll go with Mensah. Now, Alberto's probably going to go to Georgia Tech. Looks like that decision may have already been made. So what else did he mention? He mentioned Christian Walker, but was there anything else? The Miami stuff.
Schnellenberger.
The Christian Walker stuff. The Astros are still in the middle of trying to find out how they're going to make room in their infield. And, of course, the most valuable piece would likely be Paredes, and I imagine they are not – that's not the first guy they would like to trade. It feels like Walker's the first guy they'd like to trade. But like Mike Dunleavy said when he talked about Jonathan Kuminga, you can demand a trade, but is there any demand for you? Like the Astros might want to get rid of Christian Walker. I don't know that people are falling over themselves to trade for Christian Walker, particularly at a value that the Astros would think is representative of what they believe he's worth. So we'll see there. But, yeah, the infield is still – something they need to get sorted out. Chandler Rome said on his podcast, Clutch City Podcast, I think that was called?
I think that's what, Clutch Territory?
That's Foul Territory. Is it
Crush City?
Crush City, the Crush City Podcast, I believe that's what it is. He said it feels more and more likely that an infielder is going to get traded because they just got to figure that out. I know, I think Eric said one more thing, but I forgot. Either way. So I think an infielder will get traded. The Astros just got to figure out who wants what. Crush City Territory is the name of the podcast. So I would hope to keep Paredes, but if they want anything of value back, it may have to be him to sort this thing out.
Yeah, it's like they can try, apparently, to dump Christian Walker. I don't know how successful they'll be in dumping him, but they can try to dump Christian Walker, or they can get some stuff for Isak Paredes. That seems to be the thing. It's like, would you rather trade the better player and get stuff for him, or just get rid of the worst player?
Yeah, a month ago, a lot of the Christian Walker stuff was in the news, and Bob Nightingale predicted he'd be a Met. That certainly has not turned out to be the case, at least right now. But that's a good thing about predictions. If he becomes a Met in March,
play the long game.
He's still right. So we'll see how that plays out. Yeah, I would like a Rock. I would like an Astros trade. Talk about that as opposed to Stroud. But until that point, we will find ways to
talk about CJ Stroud.
Make the conversation not always about CJ Stroud. Doesn't have to always be about CJ Stroud. And we'll talk about another franchise when we come back. Because what they're up to would be great if people couldn't pull a receipt anytime they wanted to. Look, the Texans have been known to be dysfunctional. But I don't know at any point, even after a coach got fired, where they would explicitly blame fired coach for a current player on their roster being drafted. I've never heard it. In fact, I don't know that I've heard it very much across sports where now that we fired the guy, he was the reason this underperforming player is on our team. I've heard about power struggles where coaches want to have the control. Of course, the classic Bill Parcells thing when he said something about, I got to pick the groceries. But once Bill Parcells got fired, I remember Robert Kraft saying, yeah, I mean, he was the one who wanted Terry Glenn, not me. I don't remember that happening. So we will venture up to Western New York, and we'll play some sound from the Bills owner, because he blamed Sean McDermott and the staff for Keon Coleman. And then the internet said, hold on, we've got evidence that it's probably a Brandon Bean decision that went wrong. We'll do that when we come back.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5. Where?
You're listening to the Del Olalea Show, live from the Huntington Bank Studios. Here's Del Olalea.
So Nick Caserio spoke today, so we have news, if you want to call it that, regarding Joe Mixon. And also, the future of Nick Caley. We'll get to that. But first, let's get to Julian. He wants to talk about CJ Stroud. What's up, Julian?
What it is, Dive Turkey. Hey, man, is CJ Stroud the equivalent is he the Houston Texans Tony Romo? If you guys go off of him, who are you going to get that's better? But then, like, if you keep him, is he ever going to do anything for y'all? Y'all have a good one.
Is he the equivalent? Okay, they have two different career paths, certainly. Tony Romo was a never thought of guy until he appeared and started to start games for the Cowboys, of course. And that didn't start until he was 26 years old. So much different paths. You know, he made his Pro Bowls early in his career. And there's a run where he was kind of just an average quarterback. And then he had a good year in 2014 before injuries kind of ended his career. I don't think he's Tony Romo. I think it's too early to say. We got a very insulting comp of Josh Freeman by a caller. Keith, that was out of bounds. I like to make the Coleridge joke. We can't call you CJ until you play better. You're Coleridge until you play better. But even I wouldn't say he's Josh Freeman. That's too far.
Come on. We have standards.
Yeah, come on. What are you doing here?
Also, let me look up Josh Freeman.
I mean, his second year is very similar to CJ's first year, but the rest, you're not going to find much comparison. Josh Freeman was turnover prone, and CJ has been the last couple games. But
he only played for 6 years.
Yeah, he wasn't around very long because he wasn't very good.
No, he wasn't. Looking at the number, he wasn't.
I looked up those numbers earlier today after that comparison we got. He wasn't very good, and that's why he was out of the league pretty quickly. I don't think he's Tony Romo. I mean, but is he a quarterback that you could be stuck with? That's certainly a possibility. We'll just have to wait and see. The Texans don't appear to be a franchise, or at least from what we've seen from them, that is willing to do the hard thing and say, hey, we are going to make you play for a contract. Now, any talk or any thought of a potential extension this offseason feels like that got washed away by what happened in the playoffs. I don't see any quotes from Nick Caserio about contract talks with CJ. In fact, here's a quote from him, courtesy of Aaron Wilson. Really good season. Done a lot of things for the organization, good things for the organization. CJ played good football this year. In the end, the most important thing is ball security. We've shown we can take care of the football. Did a poor job Sunday. Reality is what we can do better individually, taking care of the football for a quarterback. Number one job is to mitigate risk every single play. So as I scroll through some of the conversations or questions and answers, I don't see anything about a contract extension or even having that conversation. We'll see. Some other things Nick Caserio said. It's hard to answer right now if Joe Mixon will play in 2026. Reasoning is Caserio and the organization haven't seen Joe Mixon in a while and want to get an examination. Okay. So that's why they can't tell you what the injury is. Oh, by the way, in more of that Joe Mixon stuff, he didn't explain what the injury was.
It is a unique situation.
Yeah.
It is a freak thing.
So maybe they can't tell us what the injury is because they don't even know what it is because they haven't seen Joe Mixon in a while. Is that possible? No, I kind of think they know what it is.
I mean, you know what it was in, like, August when he didn't practice? Like, at some point, he had to have, like, you can't, if you're an NFL player, you can't just go, hey, I'm hurt, I'm going to, recover on my own time, see you later, and then miss 6 months. You know, like, you just never show up for 6 months being like, no, I'm hurt, guys, trust me. Like, at some point, a Texans doctor had to have looked at his body to be like, yes, he is out indefinitely. But don't tell anybody.
I think they know what it is, and they just don't want to tell. But the fact that they haven't seen Joe Mixon in a while is pretty funny. Yeah, we haven't seen him in a while. I can't speak to his progress because I haven't seen him in a while.
Could be his foot. Could be his arm. I don't know. I haven't seen him.
They may know location, but not the rehab and how it's going. That might be where we are right now, which is unfortunate considering he's still one of your players, and it'd be helpful for you to know how the rehab is going.
It'd be very helpful.
Yeah. So
if you could give an answer that he would play in 2026, because that's the framing, is that I'm not sure if he'll play in 2026.
It'll be hard to answer that right now.
It's hard to answer if he'll play.
We'd like to be able to examine him. And we haven't done that recently, apparently.
So in the next 12 months, it's hard to say if he'll play. And he's already missed six.
Okay.
All right. Did he get Tommy John? Like, what happened?
I don't know if you can do that to a lower extremity, but who knows? I'm not even sure if his foot's actually the problem, to be honest with you.
Yeah, no, this is all from he was seen in a walking boot, like, in July. Last July. Like, come on. But it's a freak thing. You wouldn't understand. Is that what he said, or just it's a freak thing?
It's a freak thing.
Okay.
A freakish injury, I'm assuming. We had some discussions during the break about what could have happened. We may never know.
Yeah, because he also said it was nothing irresponsible on
Joe Mixon. So he wanted to get out there that Joe Mixon wasn't, I guess, the cause, or he wasn't negligent.
Yeah.
And his negligence or irresponsibility led to something. That's not what he's saying. But we have to parse and figure out and now joke about it because they have been there's been a lack of they've not been forthcoming with the information. So we still wait and see if, you know, a guy who a lot of people thought was going to be a key cog to the offense ever plays for them again. That's where we stand right now. We'll see. And I imagine Joe Mixon will tweet out something at some point if there's another report about the extent of his injury, because those tweets have always, you know, age well.
There's doubt that Joe Mixon will play in 2026. Joe Mixon quote tweets it, being like, where are you getting this information from? Well, the GM of your team just said he's not sure.
They're not sure.
He evaded a question about whether you'd play in 2026.
The full quote is, he didn't jump off a building. He wasn't doing anything irresponsible. It was a freak thing. I don't think anyone thought he jumped off a building.
now I kind of think he
did
something.
That never crossed my mind. The freak thing makes it sound like a weight fell on his foot or something.
Yeah, which happened to Lance McCullers last year.
And that would be something, while unfortunate, we could understand and wouldn't need all the secrecy.
Yeah. Also, Lance McCullers only missed like a month.
Yeah.
When that happened.
Well, I'm just trying to figure out why Joe Mixon didn't play this year.
Like, he had to have given himself like a Liz Frank injury or something. Like, he had to have like shattered his
during
foot.
Training or something.
Yeah, a navicular bone or something. Yeah. Where it's just like one of the injuries that Joel Embiid got. Like, and Joel Embiid got it playing basketball.
Yeah. We may find out, or we may never know. Some other news that came out of this: Nick Caserio said he expects Nick Cayley to return as a play caller. I always like to parse words, but I'm just going to say Nick Cayley's back unless Nick Cayley decides not to come back.
I think with Nick Caserio, there's always going to be some level of like I expect. He will never just say
he won't ever come flat out and say what is it is. Yeah, that's kind of how he operates. So that sounds like unless Nick Cayley decides he doesn't want to be back, he'll be back as a play caller.
Unless he gets a head coaching job, you know.
Steps away from the game for reasons. Who knows? But
becomes a monk.
Yeah, maybe he follows Wimby's path and decides to stay instead of coming back.
Shaves his head.
Yeah. So I think any of those dreams of Mike McDaniel were just dreams. Nick Cayley seems like he's secure with that job as long as he wants it. But other staff changes are apparently a strong possibility, according to Aaron Wilson. So while Nick Cayley may stay, you may see some other changes at other spots. We brought it up yesterday. When your quarterback plays as poorly as C.J. Stroud did, certainly in the playoffs, and didn't have, I mean, he was better in 2025 than he was in 2024, but didn't have the 2023 season or didn't elevate himself back in the top 10 quarterback conversation, someone may take the fall. And is it a quarterback coach because you don't want to do it to your OC 2 years in a row? I would not be surprised if someone goes on the chopping block and it is someone by the name of Gerard Johnson. Not me speculating, or I am speculating, but it's not me suggesting it's going to happen. It's just that
there needs to be a fall guy.
These things tend to go a certain way when the expectations aren't met by the quarterback. You have to do something to do something. And what else can you do if you're not going to get rid of the OC? I don't know if there's anyone else in the room. Maybe is there an assistant quarterback coach that can get fired so Gerard Johnson keeps his job if they want to make a move just to make a move? But
Bill Lazor gets fired?
Yeah, I don't know.
Bill Lazor's like, damn.
What could it be? But Aaron Wilson saying it's a strong possibility that other staff moves are made. That doesn't have to be about the offense, although I can't find a reason why anyone on defense should get fired. But maybe there's something we don't know about that defensive staff.
Matt Burke, I'd like to come to my office.
I think Matt Burke would be the most shocking thing to have firing to have happened in a long, long time. I was thinking more of like a
DB coach.
Like a inside wide receiver coach or something. I don't know. The slot receiver coach.
I'll say I find it hard to believe they have an inside and outside receiver.
It's not Texas Tech.
I just find it a little, the guy who's like, okay, so when Braxton Berrios is on the field, this is how we utilize him. Jaylen Noll, watch how Braxton does it.
Yeah, and Christian Kirk showed up sometimes, but not very much. Who knows? Yeah. Maybe the guy who coaches inside wide receivers, the slot receivers, didn't do a great job, and he has to go. Part of those potential staff changes. So here we are. Nick Caserio spoke. We'll go to break with this. He did talk about a potential Will Anderson contract extension. He's a good player, but as you might expect, made no concrete comments on what a potential extension
he's a good player
could be or if it'll happen this offseason. Yeah. But they are expected to happen, according to Aaron Wilson. So there it is. We got some information, but nothing concrete, and that's just the way Caserio likes it. We'll go to break, and we'll go to a team who has definitive statements about things, even if they're flat out lies. We'll hear from the Bills when we come back.
ESPN 97.5.